Well, good morning. You know, as Carissa shared, we're in this 2026, we're in this theme called One. And this comes from Ephesians chapter 4, verses 4 through 6. And as we read that, that really is framing a lot of what we talk about this year. And this is what Ephesians 4, 4 through 6 says. For there is one body, meaning church. There's one body, there's one spirit, just as you have been called to one glorious hope for the future. There is one Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of all, who is over all, in all, and living through all. So as we go throughout 2026, really this is kind of framing where the conversations will go. And today and over really the next couple of months, we're really going to be focusing on the second half of verse 4 that reads, just as you have been called to one glorious hope for the future. See, as a church, we've got our mission statement is this. This is who we are as a church. We want to help each other grow deeper in our relationship with Christ and share the hope of the gospel. So as we go into these summer months, really, we want to dive into what does that mean and what does that practically look like to live life on mission. See, up to this point, as we've been talking about our one, the one person in our life that is far from God and close to us, see, up to this point in the year, we've been talking about praying for that person. But as the year goes on, we want to turn the corner. We want to move from prayer to share. All right, so what does that look like? What does that begin to, how does that begin to play out in our lives? How do we share the hope of the gospel? And so today, as we begin this series on the Lost One, we're going to take a very practical look at 2 Corinthians chapter 5 and see what's outlined in Scripture about ways that we can do for others what God has done for us. To do for others what God has done for you. See, God has saved us and he's brought us into this new life. And as he's brought us into this new life, he's done that by his grace, by nothing that we could ever do. And so this grace that God has saved us by is what is really going to begin to change our life. And in 2 Corinthians 6, verse 1, Paul is writing, this is the end of where we're going, this is where we're going to end up today. So I'm actually going to begin with the end in mind. I'm going to begin with these verses in mind because everything that we talk about is moving towards these sentences, right? As we share the hope of the gospel, as we remember what God has done for us, the grace that he's given us, this is what God, through his word, calls us to. As God's partners, we beg you. And that beg is like one of the strongest Greek words for begging that you can read. I beg you, I implore you. There is no sense of deeper urgency than what I'm about to ask you. As God's partners, we beg you not to accept this marvelous gift of God's kindness and then ignore it. In other words, don't receive the grace of God and do nothing with it. Man, our lives are to be marked by God's grace. The work that God has done in your heart and in mine, man, that should change who we are. We beg you not to accept this marvelous gift and then ignore it. For God says, at just the right time, I heard you. And on the day of salvation, I helped you. Indeed, the right time is now. Today is the day of salvation. Man, as we talk about what does it mean to share the hope of the gospel? That's a question we get a lot. Like, how do we share the hope of the gospel? What does that look like? How do we go from praying for our one to sharing the hope of the gospel with the one person in our life that we've been praying for up to this point that God would save? Well, as we go through this, what we're going to see is we're going to see that there's three ways in this passage. We're going to see that we can do for others what God has done for us by seeing them, serving them, and ultimately sharing the hope of the gospel with the one person in our life. That's kind of the path that Paul lays out for us in this. And so as we begin, we want to really look at that statement, do for others what God has done for you. What's the motivation behind this? What is it that's going to give us the power or the urgency to carry us on to what God would have for you. Well, 2 Corinthians 5, 14 and 15 read this way. Either way, Christ's love controls us. It's his love that controls us. Since we believe that Christ died for all, we also believe that we have all died to our old life. So he died for everybody so that those who receive his new life will no longer live for themselves. Instead of living for themselves, they will live for Christ, who died and was raised for them. So as we think about this, we do for others what Christ has done for us. God saved us through Jesus. And later on, we're going to see that we are God's ambassadors, as if God were making his appeal through us. We take this marvelous gift that we've received, that we've done nothing for, and we say, God, how do I not let it stop with me? God, I don't want this wonderful message to stop with me. God, who are the people in my life that you want me to share the hope of the gospel with? This one glorious hope for the future that we've been called to. Man, in light of eternity, this opportunity that God has, when we placed our faith in Jesus, he has rehomed us for eternity. Right? He's pulled us out of what was called the kingdom of darkness and pulled us into the kingdom of light. He's given us this new life, and this new life that we live, it's no longer our life that we're living, it's actually our life that's hidden in Christ. So when people see us, the question isn't, man, how impressed are they with you? It's when they see you and they see the life that you live, whose life are they really seeing? Is it yours or is it God's work in your life through you? Because that's why when God saves us, he doesn't just take us to heaven right away. God has a plan and a purpose for every single one of us. And so as we begin to understand what this purpose is, the purpose is to take the hope of the gospel to the people who are far from God but close to us. That's why God has us on this earth. So what does that practically look like? What does that mean? Because when we get saved, there's a shift that begins to take place. And this shift is this, right? Before I'm saved, before I come to Christ, most generally, my life is all about me. I may do nice things for other people, but in some ways, it's my life is really, at the end of the day, it's how do I serve myself? But when God saves us and he gives us new life, it begins to reorient and rewire the way that we see the world. And then the focus shifts from me. And a lot of times we hear it this way, it shifts from me to others. But what we just read is actually, it's mostly true, right? The shift is mostly from me to others, but what this verse is telling us is this, that ultimately the shift is from me to he. That's why Paul wrote, those who have been given new life will no longer live for themselves, but will live for Christ. It's like, man, is my life about Jesus? And not only is my life about Jesus, is my life about making Jesus known? And it's keeping my eyes focused and fixed on him. And then out of the overflow of the love of God given to me, man, I want to then make my life about other people. It's not forgetting about other people, but it's seeing Christ first and saying, God, don't let me love people in my own strength. God, don't let me see people from the way that I used to see them, but God, let me be reminded of the grace that you've given me. God, it's what you've done for me. And so God, because of what you've done for me, because of your great love, man, let me love my neighbor in a way that's informed by the ways that you've loved me. It's Christ's love that controls us. The other ways to say that in the Greek are it controls us or it compels us. It urges us on. It's like the gas in the engine. It's what makes us go as Christians. It's the love of God. So is your life marked by the love of God? That's a great place to start as we begin to think about the Lost One series. So we get the opportunity, we get the calling to do for others what God has done for us. And so the question is, how do we do that? What does that look like? Well, Paul continues on and he gives us three very practical ways that we can begin to move from prayer to share. So this is what the first way, so the first way that we get to do for others what God has done for you is by seeing the person. It's by seeing them. It's by seeing them differently. Here's how Paul continues on, verse 16. So, because of all that, because of the love of God, and because of what he's done, he died for my sins, he's taken me from my old life, and he's asked me to live for him. Because of all of that, we have stopped evaluating others, we've stopped seeing others from a human point of view. See, at one time we thought of Christ merely from a human point of view, but how differently we know him now. This means that anyone who belongs to Christ has become a new person. The old life is gone, and the new life has begun. See, as we read through these two verses, there's a lot of language about seeing and knowing, right? We stopped evaluating other people from a human point of view. We stopped seeing them. How differently we know Christ, right? As Paul's talking about this, there's really, he's talking about what does it mean to know God? What does it mean to know Jesus? See, in the Greek language, there was three common words, three primary words for knowing something or acquiring knowledge. I'm not going to give you the words in a test, but here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you the concepts and explain it a little bit. So generally, when it comes to knowledge in the Bible, the first way is like common sense knowledge, right? That's knowledge that's everybody should understand, right? That's common sense. Everybody should kind of know that. Then there's this thing called like general knowledge. And that general knowledge is, it's understood by most, but there's probably some people who do or don't understand that. And then the final primary word for knowledge is knowledge, intimate knowledge in the context of a relationship. In other words, do I genuinely know this person? Right? Let me demonstrate the difference between that knowledge here. So there's common sense knowledge. Today is Sunday. It's pretty underwhelming information because we all understand that, right? Right? Today is Sunday. Right? That's common sense. But then we move to general knowledge. General knowledge is today is June 7th or 6/7. And intimate knowledge is because I know you, half of you are tuning me out for the rest of the message thinking this guy's a buffoon. And the other half of you are like, why wasn't that under the common sense knowledge? Like, yeah, obviously, today is 6/7. But you take that, like, common sense to general, to specific intimate relational knowledge, that's kind of what happens. That's kind of our story in how we came to know Jesus. Think about this. Common sense knowledge. Jesus exists and lived on the earth. General knowledge says, okay, I want to get to know a little bit more about who Jesus is. Jesus claimed to be the Son of God, who is God in the flesh, who came to die to take away the sin of the world. A lot of people know about that. But then the shift from general knowledge to intimate, specific relationship knowledge is this. Do you believe that by faith? See, that movement from knowing that Jesus existed to who he was to saying, okay, what do I believe about Jesus? That's the shift in knowledge. The Bible has those three words. But in the same way that we came to know who Jesus was and place our faith in him and have our sins forgiven is also the same way that we are called to get to know the people in our life. Think about it. In the world, common sense knowledge, there's about 8 billion people in the world. It's general knowledge, right? So then we move to the general knowledge is this. As I get to know new people, I meet new people. I don't add to the population. I'm just getting to know the names of the people who are already in the world, who make up that 8 billion people. And as I get to know their name and know a little bit about them, then I move from generally knowing about them to knowing who they are. And as we think about the one person in our life that God has called us to share the hope of the gospel with, it's moving from knowing about them to saying, hey, I want to know who you are. I want to know who you are and remember the grace of God. I'm not going to evaluate you. I'm not going to judge you because I know the grace that has been given to me. I know what God has done for me, and I want to do for you what God has done for me. I want to show you the love of God because the love of God will change you when you accept him by his grace, his gift of forgiveness. It's saying, I want to know, go from being interesting, because before Christ, our life was all about being interesting, right? Our life is making, letting everybody know how cool we are and all about our life and our way. But when God saves us, it moves from being interesting to being interested. You know, psychology says that there's these things called micro repulsions. And I almost couldn't say that, right? So this is like, I'm starting to outkick my coverage here. Like, there's these things called micro repulsions where if somebody in a conversation always finds a way to turn the conversation back to themselves, it's like a micro repulsion. It's like silently turns people away. But as Christians, we realize that our life is no longer about ourselves. We don't live for ourselves. We live for Christ, and our life turns to say, how do I see this person the way that God sees them? So then I make the shift from being interesting, saying, look at me, to being interested. Tell me about your life. And as I'm seeing people, I'm seeing them from through a very different lens. I'm not just seeing them with my physical eyes. I'm seeing them with my ears. I'm listening. I'm listening for the ways. What are the ways, God, that you have called me to see this person? What are the places in their life that you want to insert the hope of the gospel into? What are the areas that, God, that if you were to come in and give them new life, this story would be a radical transformation of your love and your grace and your goodness? That's how I begin to see people. How can the hope of the gospel reach this person? So as we do for others what God has done for us, we do that first by seeing people. And that's what God did for us. Man, he saw humanity. He saw us separated from him because of sin. And he saw us in our condition, and he said, I love you too much to let you stay separated from me. I see you, and I'm going to step into your world. And then I'm going to move to this next thing. See, it starts with seeing people, but it doesn't stop there. We move to this. We do for others what God has done for us by serving them. See, as we engage in this relationship with the one, with the people in our lives who are far from God but close to us, it's moving from seeing them with our ears to serving them. And that's what Paul talks about here in 2 Corinthians 5, verse 18. This is the shift that he makes. Yes, we see them. We evaluate them differently. We see them through the eyes that God has given us. But then all of this, verse 18, is a gift from God, who brought us back to himself through Christ. And God has given us this task. He's given us a task of reconciling people to him. See, that word reconciling is this. It means to bring back what once was lost. Right? We were separated. We were lost because of our sin. But this ministry of reconciliation is God, through Christ, bringing us back to himself so that we can experience that new life. That's what this reconciliation means. But as Paul goes on, he talks about this. He says, we've been given a task to reconcile people to him. That word task could be translated, and often is, we've been given the ministry or the service of reconciliation. In other words, there's this service, there's this servanthood in view. So then we move from just simply seeing people, but as we listen, and as we listen with ears to see, God, what are the ways that you've called me to move from seeing to serving? God, what are the very practical, tangible ways that I can meet a need in this person's life? And when I meet the need in their life, and they say, why did you do this? It's an opportunity to point to the ultimate need, which is to share the hope of the gospel. And we'll get there in a second, but it's to serve them. See, I'm going to share a story. I'm going to keep the names out of this for confidentiality's sake, but this is a few weeks ago. We were selling something on Facebook Marketplace, and you know, Facebook Facebook Marketplace goes, right? You post something and then you like sell it. And sometimes like people kind of ghost a little bit. Well, this first time this has ever happened, we had like three people ghost us, right? So we just moved down to the next person. This person comes to the house, they buy these things. And as we get to a conversation and find out, hey, we both go to WCC. And then I said, hey, is there anything else we could do for you? And this person was sharing, hey, I just moved into this new place and I would love to have a table to eat a meal with my family. But I just moved into a new place. Do you, like, if we could get a table, that would be awesome. Within 24 hours, we had a table from somebody in this church who said, hey, we're looking to get rid of this table for a while now. We weren't sure what to do with it. And then we saw an email come across our desk that somebody was looking for a table for their home. And we thought, man, this is perfect. All of this happened within the span of about a week and a half. From the time the message was preached about having a meal with your kid around a table to the time this person had a table to share a meal with their family. That's because as the body of Christ, this church stepped up and served. We had the opportunity to share and show the love of Jesus in a very practical, tangible way. But see, over the course of this month in June, here's what's happening. We, as Carissa shared a little bit, we're going to talk a little bit about serving. What does that mean to serve? And there's so many ways and so many opportunities to step in to this task or this ministry or this service that God has called us to, right? Because when Paul uses the word task, here's the picture in mind. When God saved you, yes, he saved you from your sin, but that wasn't just all that he saved you from. He saved you into this new life. And when he saved you, he put something in every single one of you, so that you and I, we could live our life on mission. In other words, yes, we were saved from sin, but we were saved for a purpose. And that purpose was to show the love of Jesus to the people around us. And so over the course of the next three weeks, out in the cafe, there's gonna be this booth and ways to say thank you. If you're already serving, thank you for serving. But maybe you're sitting here today and you're like, man, WCC's been my home for a long time. I've been coming. But I feel like there's more. I feel like there's something God has put in me to serve. And I want to use it to give back. There's so many ways in the walls of the church, in our community, and around the world through missions that you can serve and step in. So I want to invite you. Chris is going to give you more information after the service on what to do. But I want to invite you to think about this. What are the ways, what are the things that God has put in me to use as to serve him and to serve others? Because when I look at my life is not my own. We just read that, right? And said, I'm living for Christ. So my life is not my own. And the shift that begins to take place as we realize that truth is that not only is my life not my own, but my things are not my own. So how do I begin to reshape and rethink the way that I see my things? God, how can I use the things that you've given me to serve and to bless others? And when we do that, that is one way that we can do for others what Christ has done for us. Because Jesus told us that when he came to the earth, his mission was this. The Son of Man, speaking about himself, the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. Which means when Jesus died on the cross for us in our place, he was serving us. He was saying, I'm doing for you what you couldn't do for yourself. I'm gonna serve you in this way. But the good news of the gospel is this: Jesus didn't stay dead. He came back to life and he wants to offer that new life. And when we share the hope of the gospel, yes, we're doing for others what God has done for us. And that moves us to this final point. We're gonna talk about this final point more over the next few weeks. And so I don't wanna take too much time on it, but here's what I do wanna share. We have the opportunity to do for others what God has done for you by ultimately sharing the hope of the gospel. Because the reality is, yes, God has given us the ministry or the task of reconciliation, but he's also given us the message of reconciliation. Our life doesn't just stop at doing good things for people. Yes, that's great. Yes, that's awesome. Yes, there are many ways that we can step in and meet a need. But at the end of the day, if we don't share the love of Jesus, we miss the heart of what God has called us to do. That's why he goes on in verse 19, for God was in Christ reconciling the world to himself. That's what God was doing. He was bringing us back to himself through Jesus. And he was no longer counting people's sins against them. And he gave us this wonderful message of reconciliation. And so we are Christ's ambassadors. We are Christ's ambassadors. God is making his appeal through us. And we speak for Christ when we plead, come back to God. That's what Paul continues on with. And as he talks about that, he says, we are Christ's ambassadors. You know what an ambassador is? An ambassador is this. It's somebody who represents a nation in a foreign land. So all around the world, we have U.S. ambassadors that live in foreign territories that represent the United States. So Paul, when he says that we are Christ's ambassadors and God is making his appeal through us, here's what he's saying. There's a lot of times where people ask, is God still working today? Is God still active? Is God still on the move? When we step into the ministry of reconciliation and carry the message of reconciliation, motivated by the love of Jesus, it's the opportunity to see God at work today through me, to see this world reached and impacted by the love and the message that Jesus has come to give you new life. So as ambassadors, here's what that means. This world is not our home. This is not our forever home. In fact, we are here temporarily. And for some people in this world, eternity will come quicker than it will for others. In fact, in Kosciuszko County, every year, they do a census. And over the course of the last 3 years, there's been a census in Kosciuszko County. So in a county of about 80,000 people, about 730 to 750 people every single year step into eternity. They die and they are heading to their forever home. You say, 750, like what does that number look like? If you were to take a look around this room right now, this is about 750 people. So as we look around and see this many people will in our county, people that we go to work with, people that we live around, people that we go to school with, and people that we sit next to at the soccer field will step into eternity. And God loved them enough to send his son to say, I'm going to do something about the separation. And not only am I going to do something about the separation, but for those of you who've placed your faith in Jesus and understand the grace that's been extended to you, I want you to now take that gift and I want you to do for others what my son Jesus has done for you. I want you to bring others to me. And that starts with seeing them, and then it moves to serving them, and then it ends with sharing the hope of the gospel. That's how we begin to move from prayer to share. And as we begin to end our time today, I'm gonna have the worship team come out. I wanna share just a brief story with you. See, there's a guy who goes to church here whose name is Rob. And Rob, over the course of the last 10 years, has been playing cards with a group of people. And that group of people has kind of changed a little bit over the years, but over the course of the last 10 years, Rob has asked the question, how do I begin to share the hope of the gospel? How do I begin to show the love of Jesus to these guys? Well, over the course of that time, Rob has been not perfect, but consistent. Consistently showing up, consistently saying, how do I begin to see these people and listen for opportunities to share hope in potentially hopeless situations? And over the course of the years, Rob has been having conversations literally about matters of life and death. Right? As he's talking with these people, there are people who are experiencing hopelessness in our community to the point of wondering, is this it? Is this all there is to life? What is the purpose of living? And as Rob plays cards, he gets the opportunity to share the hope of the gospel, that there is more to life than hopelessness. And over the course of time, Rob's gotten to and continue to engage in conversation and find ways to serve and to listen and to be there to the point where these people know that when they have a hard time, they know who to go to. As they're trying to figure out who God is and what's my relationship with him, they know without saying it that Rob is an ambassador of Christ. And when they have a conversation with him, something's different about this guy. Like when I see him, there's something that's intriguing. Well, last year, Rob was at a work gathering and there was somebody who came in and brought lunch and they handed out these little poker chips. And on these poker chips was talked about the armor of God. And how do we stand firm in a world that's hopeless? So over the course of the last year, Rob has been carrying this poker chip with him to go play cards with this group of guys. And just recently, the guy who gave him this poker chip just stepped into eternity. But the impact of that man saying, hey, I want to share the love of Jesus through this thing called a poker chip. Rob took that poker chip and was playing cards one night, and a guy who's getting ready to move to Florida said, hey, what's on that poker chip? And this is a guy that Rob has played cards with for a long time, and Rob got the opportunity to share the love of Jesus with this man right before he went to Florida. And so what he did was he says, hey, you know what? I'm gonna give this to you. When you are gone, I want you to remember who Jesus is, that there's a God who loves you. And hopefully every time you see that, you remember. I don't know how this story ends. I wish I did. You know, how cool would it be in like 3 weeks if I came up and said, hey, that guy that we just talked about, he gave his life to Jesus. I don't know how this story is. But for all of us, when it comes to our one person, the one person that God has put in our life to share the hope and the love of Jesus with, we're not responsible for the outcome. God hasn't made us responsible for their decision, but what we have is we have the privilege and the obligation to take the good news of Jesus to a world that is hurting and hopeless. So my challenge for you is this. We've talked about a lot today, seeing people and serving them and sharing the hope of the gospel. My challenge for us as we close out this time, we're gonna have a little bit of time to reflect, is what is the next step for me and the person God has called me to love? When it comes to my one person, what is the next step with them? Is it inviting them over for a cookout? Is it turning the corner from just praying to saying, hey, I'm gonna start listening a little bit different? Or maybe it's, God, I'm praying for an opportunity. God, would you place it in my lap? And if you wanna see God work, pray for that. And then when it happens, you're gonna be like, okay, this is happening. But it's to walk forward and say, God, how does your love look through me? So the question and the challenge is this: what is the next step that God might be asking you to take with your person?